Blog Talk Radio.
There is a sixth dimension beyond that which is known to men. It is a dimension as immense as the sky and as perpetual as eternity. It is the middle ground between illumination and darkness, between knowledge and ignorance. It lies between the depths of man's horror and the apex of his learning. This is a dimension of fantasy. It is an area which we call the Eerie Zone.
That guy sounded like he had a cold, huh? No. Good evening and welcome to Eerie House Radio. I'm Dale Kay from Spook Show here, along with...
And with Dave Binkley from We're Just Really Bad Movie and Spaceship One and Goat. And we are also here with...
Hello and greetings, felicitations and salutations. Loosen your tie because you're going to need your all the air. It's going to be a very choking experience. It's CW here.
And we're continuing our weekend of choking up. Crimes of Strangulation. And a good story tonight from CBS Radio Mystery Theater.
Yes, and we didn't really want to put a chokehold on your weekend like this, but hey, sometimes you just have to.
You know, I'll keep you hanging in suspense.
Ah, come on, Dale, cough it up.
Put a stranglehold on the entire time frame here.
Oh, gag me.
Oh, my. Oh.
Bad puns is
I'm
up.
I'm out of line.
That doesn't stop Fonzbane and good old Bob from logging in here in the chat.
It does not.
Mm-mm. And we're getting all choked up. Not in the... sad and melancholy kind of a way, but rather
no, you'd have to play the Lost. You'd have to play the Lost in Space music for that, Dale.
Mm. I don't know what you're referring to. I really don't.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah. Uh-huh.
Uh-huh. Oh, there it is.
Oh, poor William. Dr. Smith broke his heart again. Now, tonight we...
Why not?
Sorry, I had to just indulge in that music just a little longer. Tonight, CBS Radio Mystery Theater.
Got a lump in my throat.
Aww. And we'll bring you some facts, too, about the Honolulu Strangler. It's a hell of a place to have a strangler. One of the nicest places
on Earth.
Yeah,
you don't think of anything like that when you you think of Honolulu and Hawaii. You think of hula girls, and you think of sunshine and surf and beach and maybe surfing and... That's what you
palm
think
trees,
of them, but not,
pineapple,
not,
yeah.
Mai Tai,
pineapple,
yeah. Yeah.
And real blue Hawaii made with actual coconut. Mm-hmm. Good stuff. Good stuff. Yeah, tonight.
Yeah, you don't think of it.
Lots of fun and horror. Nothing like a good strangulation, Carice.
Yep, right, Pete. Right, Pete.
There you are.
That's right.
So,
Journey into Terror, one's called.
Yeah. I don't know that this has... I'll have to look this up over here because My other one's playing fun with me.
Yeah, does it ever?
But yeah, right here we go. Okay, let's see.
Kind of
I was thinking, I don't think this has all the regular. Actually, a few people, yeah, the Carol Tytel is a regular, but Roy Thines and Lynn Loring are not, did not do a lot of them. Carol Tytel certainly did, doing, as I'm flipping over to her page here, real quick. Come on, you can do this, Carol. She was in 116 episodes of the Radio Mystery Theater. Famous mostly for playing... Cecilia Burns on Edge of Night and Victoria Ballinger on The Guiding Light. So, you know, staying there in New York and obviously doing stage work as well, because you would do the stage work at night and you could do the soap operas during the day. And, of course, during the day, you also had the opportunity to do the CBS Radio Mystery Theater, because that was right there in New York as well. That's why we ended up with so many wonderful Broadway actors having a chance to get a national stage on radio.
Is a tremendous show, and I'm sorry I missed it back in the day, but it is so much fun catching up here at Erie House, where we have a whole lot of radio.
We do.
Absolutely.
And we want to get started on our little adventure with the Honolulu Strangler.
We could do that. You know, it is hard to think about a strangler in that part of the world. Do you think of people like H.H. Holmes in Chicago or Ted Bundy up in the Pacific Northwest? Nah. they have crime there too. Honolulu is actually a big city. It gets millions of tourists every year. Between 1985 and 86, a real darkness reached Honolulu. During those years, Hawaii's first known serial killer, the Honolulu Strangler, took five lives. The case remains unsolved to this day and may be the blackest mark in Honolulu's history. Mm-hmm. Somebody want to take number 10?
Yep, I think you're up, CW.
Oh, very good. Let's see. Number 10, the murder of Vicki Gale Purdy. The first recorded victim of Honolulu Strangler, known as the Honolulu Strangler. I want to keep it PG rated as much as possible here.
Appreciate that.
25 years old.
Yeah. Yep. CW, you need to back off from the mic just a wee bit. We're getting a lot of windscreen there.
Oh, sorry about that.
That's great.
Thank you. Miss Purdy, gorgeous blonde who lived in Milani with her husband, Gary, was stationed in Hawaii as a helicopter pilot for the U.S. Army. As for Miss Purdy, she worked at the... I'm sorry, my Hawaiian Polynesian is off, but why? Wahawai Video Rental Store.
Pretty close.
Small and petite. Yeah. Gary and Vicky's friends all told police that Vicky packed a mean punch. So she was a fighter. And she came from out of North Carolina. Very headstrong individual. Honolulu detectives discovered that she was known to go nightclubbing with friends without the company of her husband, Gary. One night, she failed to come home. When Vicky failed to come home that night, Gary relentlessly paged his wife, a pager, no cell phones then, but just a pager.
It's the 80s.
yep.
Well, there you are. Yep. Next day, he found... Vicky's vehicle in the car parking lot of the Shorebird Hotel. A local cabbie told police that he dropped her off at the hotel around midnight. Vicky's remains were found on the morning of 30th of May, 1985. Her remains located on an embankment near Teehai Lagoon. Vicky's killer had bound her hands behind her back, and then that was it, the end of Miss Pretty. So that's number 10 on this. Wow. In the beautiful paradise of Honolulu. Very shivery feelings, folks.
Yep.
Very shivery.
I'll go ahead and hit number 9. You think you murdered these Hawaiian names? Wait till I get to it. Number 9 was the Video Store
All
Connection,
right.
One of the first angles pursued by investigators concerning the murder of Vicky Gale Purdy was the Waha Video Rental Store. Gary Purdy had long objected to his wife's place of work, for the video store was well known to sell pornographic films. In the sexual nature of the crime, Honolulu detectives surmised that may have been porn-obsessed customer of Wahawa, a video rental, and had stalked after and attacked Vicky. It was undeniable that Oahu Video Rental had a bad reputation. The store had already seen deadly violence in the past. In December of 1984, two women, a worker and a co-owner of the store, were stabbed to death. A gruesome case, however, was never tied to the murder of Vicky Purdy. And that's where we're going to leave it until our first segment of the Mystery Theater tonight.
Yeah, which we should probably get to. This is an oldie from way back.
Episode number 133 from, looks like it is August 14th of 1974.
The CBS Radio Mystery Theater presents...
Eerie House presents...
Come in. Welcome.
Well,
I'm E.G. Marshall.
Okay.
Welcome to a world of terror. To those of you who have never experienced terror, it is but a word. Quite meaningless, really. Altogether without substance. But to those who have felt its icy touch, it has the same mind-shattering meaning it had for Jane Prentice when Iris Patterson told her...
You'll just have to pretend you know nothing about all this. Act like a bride.
Like a bride? No, I can't.
It's up to you. You're really in no danger at this point. You won't be till you sign the insurance application.
I won't sign it.
You'll have to. So you don't arouse his suspicions. Oh, and one thing more.
Yes?
Whatever you do, don't cross him. Do as he says, precisely as he says. Always. Or we may not be able to save you.
Our mystery drama, Journey into Terror, was written especially for the Mystery Theater by George Lowther and stars Roy Thinnes and Lynn Loring. It is sponsored in part by Buick Motor Division and Anheuser-Busch Incorporated, brewers of Budweiser. I'll be back shortly with Act One. We never know what the morrow may bring, do we? Indeed, what unexpected turn of fate may change our lives within the next hour? The truth is, we may well see but ignore telltale signs which warn us of danger ahead. And when the blow falls, wonder how in the world we could have failed to take heed. Jane Stoddard took no notice of the telltale signs and as a result, faced death in a horrible form.
I certainly admire the way you're taking a sudden change in our honeymoon plans, Jane. You're a real sport.
Nonsense, Tom. Whither thou goest, I will go.
To Detroit instead of the Bahamas on your honeymoon?
It's not your fault your wealthy client lives here instead of Nassau.
Patient, Jane, patient, not client.
A very handsome and talented one. Do you have clients, patients all over the country?
All over the world.
You mean we're going to be traveling constantly?
Oh, no. My practice is mainly in New York, but now and again I'm called into consultation. Well, have fun, sweetheart. You'll see. And now I'd better get a move on, or my patient will find himself another doctor.
Will you be long?
No, a few hours. Why don't you get out of this hotel and do some shopping?
Maybe. But right now, I think I'll just stretch out and rest a bit.
Good. And you'll be in great shape for the theater tonight and some dancing later. See you in a few hours, sweetheart.
Darling.
Bye now.
Bye, dearest. I think I could be sunning myself on Paradise Beach right this minute. Nice, hard bed. Oh, it feels good to stretch out. Turn on the radio. Get some music.
We interrupt for a special bulletin. The body of a woman, a newly married bride, was found less than an hour ago in her palatial Shaker Heights home. According to the police, she had been tortured, then strangled with one of her own stockings. The coroner has established the time of death as having occurred about 48 hours ago.
Fine honeymoon. I'm in a hotel room listening to the latest murder report. Yes?
Mrs. Stoddard. Mrs. Thomas Stoddard?
Yes?
I'm calling from the lobby, Mrs. Stoddard. You don't know me, but my name is Iris Patterson. I know you're alone at the moment. I saw your husband leave the hotel just a few minutes ago.
What is it you want?
I want to come up and talk with you.
About what?
It's an urgent matter, Mrs. Stoddard. In fact, and please don't be upset now. It's a matter of life and death.
Life and death? Whose?
Yours, I'm afraid.
Come in, Miss Patterson.
Yes, but Iris will do. My credentials.
New York City Police. Special Branch Detective Division. You're a detective?
Yes.
Well, what in the world do you want with me?
Mrs. Stoddard, what I'm about to tell you is going to shock you. But please keep in mind that, at the moment, at least, you're in no danger.
Danger? At the moment? What are you talking about?
Let me explain. About an hour ago, the body of a young woman, a bride, was found in her home in Shaker Heights.
I just heard the bulletin on the radio.
Did you?
What has that murder got to do with me?
She was murdered by your husband. Here. Please, here, let me.
No, I'm all right.
I thought for a moment you were going to faint.
So did I, frankly, but I'm all right. Surely you've made some sort of mistake.
No, I'm afraid not.
But you must have. Tom, my husband can't possibly be a murderer. No matter what you say, I can't and I won't believe it.
I don't blame you for feeling as you do, of course, but perhaps you'll believe me if... Well, if I tell you a few things about yourself that will surprise you.
Such as what?
Your first meeting with Tom Stoddard was accidental, or rather appeared accidental.
What? Why, yes. I mean, it was. It was in New York City. It was raining. We both hailed the same cab at the same time.
And at his suggestion, you shared it.
Yes.
It happened roughly 10 days, 2 weeks ago.
Yes. But how do you know?
It's his M.O., his modus operandi, the way he operates. Now, I'm quite sure, for example, that you have no family to speak of, no mother, father, they're dead, no brothers and sisters.
That's true.
And few close friends. You lived alone. No roommate.
You're absolutely right, but I still
don't... His victims are always young women who are alone in the world. You see, this helps to make them easy prey. I mean, they're lonely, they yearn for companionship, and are perfect setups for a whirlwind courtship. He swept you off your feet, of course.
Oh, he did. Flowers, candy, dinner dates, theater, it was... I was ecstatic, but... No. No, you can't be right. You have made a mistake. A terrible mistake.
Mrs. Stoddard, Jane, if I may.
Yes.
We have made no mistake. For example, what about the insurance policy?
What insurance policy?
Hasn't he mentioned insurance to you?
No.
He will. Hasn't gotten around to it yet, that's all, but sooner or later, probably sooner, he's going to want you to take out an insurance policy for a large sum, naming him beneficiary.
It's unbelievable, incredible.
It is true, nevertheless.
If it is, if Tom is a murderer, if he did kill that bride in Shaker Heights...
And a few others.
Then why don't you simply arrest him?
Because we don't have enough evidence. He's extremely clever. And so far, we've been totally unable to nail him with the goods. That, Jane, is where you come in.
What do you mean?
We want you to help us nail him with the goods.
Me?
You could be... The chances you are his next victim. Now, if you consent to work with us, follow our instructions, we can set a trap for him.
With me as the bait?
Yes.
No. I couldn't do that. I haven't the nerve for anything like that.
I think you have. And just remember, you're in no danger at the moment. You won't be until you sign your name to an insurance policy.
But, look, wait a minute. There's one thing I don't understand.
What?
Tom wasn't married to that young bride in Shaker Heights, was he?
No.
Well?
He marries his brides for money. He kills others for kids.
Oh, good Lord.
Now, if you help us, just work along with us, follow our instructions, you will have a better chance of saving yourself than if you don't.
What do you want me to do?
For the time being... Nothing. Except to, well, just act like a bride. In other words, do nothing to arouse his suspicions.
I can't do it. I just can't.
It's up to you, Jane. Of course. If you feel you can't, well, you can't. But as I said, you're in no real danger now, and you won't be until he brings up that little matter of... insurance. Jane, you can do it. You must.
I... All right.
Good girl. Now, one thing more.
Yes?
He doesn't remain long in one place. He kills and runs, you might say. Now, he'll probably suggest leaving Detroit and going somewhere else. If he does, and we're positive he will, go along with him. Don't cross him. Don't ever cross him. One false move could mean sudden death, Jane. Sudden and agonizing death.
I thought the third act was a riot, didn't you, Jane?
Yes. Yes, it was, Tom.
I noticed you didn't laugh much, though.
Of course I did.
It seemed to me the only times you laughed were when you caught me watching you. I'll tell you the truth, honey, you've been kind of depressed all evening and trying awfully hard to act as if you weren't.
Well, to be honest, Tom, I'm just not feeling well.
Well, maybe you are yearning for NASA in the Bahamas, wishing you were there instead of here.
I'm with you, Tom, and that's all that matters.
Sure?
Couldn't be sure. And anyhow, I like Detroit. I'm enjoying myself.
I'm sorry to hear about that.
Why?
Well, we're leaving for Los Angeles in the morning.
Oh?
Well, what do you mean, oh?
Just, oh. Tom, why are we going to Los Angeles? Another patient?
No, I had a call from Greg Benson, a colleague, a friend of mine. He's managing the National Conference for Psychiatrists in Los Angeles. The head speaker was taken ill, and he can't appear tomorrow evening, and Greg asked if I'd fill in.
Oh, well, that's fine, just fine.
You're not upset.
I said it before, and I'll say it again. Whither thou goest, there go I.
Mm. And what say we head for bed?
Bed?
Bed. You know, that thing you lie on, close your eyes, and go to sleep?
I'm not really sleepy. If I go to bed now, I'll just toss and turn all night long.
Okay, then. Suppose we sit and talk about our future together.
What's to talk about?
Redecorating our new apartment. You said you wanted to. How much money you'll need for the household expenses. Oh, and insurance.
Insurance?
Naturally, I'm going to make you beneficiary of all my life policies. In fact, that's already in the works. Ed Kearns, my agent, is handling it. And he suggested, and I agree, that we ought to take her, a policy in your name, making me beneficiary. $100,000, say.
A lot of money.
Well, I suppose it is. But let's say you're worth it. Honey, what is it?
What?
You went white as a ghost. Say, you are off your feed. Come on over here. Let me put my arms around you and hold you. Yeah, that's better, isn't it?
Yes.
Happy?
Yes.
You'd better be. Because you're in real trouble if you're not.
Trouble?
Sure. Happy or not, you're stuck with me. Till death do us part.
It would appear that Tom Stoddard is not only a murderer, but a murderer with a sardonic sense of humor. The full import of those words from the marriage ceremony, the import of Tom's use of them, is by no means lost on Jane. And for the first time in her young life, terror becomes more than a word. It becomes an actuality. I'll be back shortly with Act Two.
But first, there's, well, us.
Hey, Dale, doesn't his voice, his delivery sound a lot like Craig Stevens?
A bit.
Yeah, I keep thinking of, when I hear him talking, I think it's Peter Gunn is doing this. Peter Gunn is really going to do this?
Yeah.
Oh, no.
Always makes me think of the Blues Brothers.
I've got that theme song in my head.
The Peter Gunn theme always makes me think of the Blues Brothers.
Really?
But Roy Finnis, now I recognize the voice as well as the name, way before The X-Files, even before Kolchak Night Stalker.
Yep.
He knew the truth was out there, and he was chasing it. The Invaders.
Yes, a great 60s show.
Oh, yeah.
Television show. Yes.
I hate to say it, but I watched it.
Roy Finnis even had a... It's on YouTube, everyone, if you want to take a gander at it. That's where I found it. It's really good stuff as well. Plus the fact Roy Finnis was given a small recurring part. I forgot which season of The X-Files, but he was in The X-Files, sort of just bringing it over, keeping it real, as it were.
Sure, a nod to the old show, man. That's great.
Yeah.
What isn't great is the Honolulu Strangler.
Bit of an homage.
That's right. You got number eight there, Dale.
Yeah, okay. I'm trying to segue my butt right over there because the next victim after Ms. Purdy was a high school student, a 17-year-old Regina Sakamoto. Sakamoto was last heard from on January 14th, 1986, at about 7:15 a.m. Why am I making this lighthearted? I don't know. During a brief phone conversation with her boyfriend, she said that she would be late and not catch her usual bus. She would be considered missing for over a month. And then in February 86, her corpse was found, guess what? Near Kihei Lagoon again. Investigators discovered that she had been molested and strangled just like Vicky Purdy. And also like Purdy, she was bound with her hands behind her back. She was small and petite like Vicky, although Regina was noticeably shorter and thinner than her. Vicky was also a Hawaii transplant. She was actually born in Kansas. Her surname came from her stepfather, military serviceman Maurice Sakamoto. By all accounts, she was a shy and quiet girl who planned on attending university in Hawaii in the fall. Didn't work out. Nice looking kid. There's a picture of her. She's really pretty.
Yep.
And take it away, CFW.
CW. Yep.
Number seven.
We have, let's see, that would be number seven. The discovery of Regina Sakamoto's remains convinced the homicide detectives that there was a serial killer on the loose. First of all, the killer's first two victims had been strangled. Second, the killer had bound both Purdy and Sakamoto. And in both instances, the women had died with their hands secured behind their backs. There was the importance of the Kihei Lagoon, Ojai residents, tourists alike, knew the lagoon as part of an urban beach park. The lagoon had easy access to the Pacific Ocean, dotted here and there with tiny islands. This was the killer's preferred dumping ground.
Nice.
And in the case of Honolulu in the 80s, the Kihei Lagoon Park was about as secluded as it got.
Yeah. Okay, I have a question here if we go any further. We're not saying the R word tonight. We're not saying the R word tonight. Is that what it is?
I keep going.
We haven't yet, have we?
Well, I thought I did, but we shall go with molested, I guess, instead of the R word. How's that? This is number six, is the murder of Denise Hughes. 2 weeks after Regina Sakamoto disappeared, 21-year-old Denise Hughes, a native of Washington State, failed to show up for work at her job as a secretary for a telephone company. Like Regina, Denise used Honolulu's bus system to get around, and it's likely that Denise met her killer on one of those buses.
Right.
Three fishermen eventually found Hughes' corpse on February 1st, 1986. Rather than the Kihei Lagoon, Hughes' killer had left their body near the, Malanoa stream. That's as close as I'm getting. This is This was the only change to the killer's modus operandi. The three young fishermen initially found Hughes' body wrapped in a blue tarp, although Hughes' corpse was badly decomposed by the time it was found. Homicide investigators quickly had discerned the fact that her hands had been bound prior to her death, and that she had been strangled. There was no R mentioned there in that one. So we will now head into the second part of the Mystery Theater and pick up with five going into Act 3.
Absolutely. Here's Journey into Terror, Part 2. Three. We'll be back, I promise, with our ghosts.
Young and pretty Jane Stoddard has taken the first steps on a journey of terror as she realizes she has married a murderer, a man who tortures and strangles brides for money and for thrills.
drugs.
Detective Iris Patterson of the New York Police Department has warned Jane that Tom Stoddard kills and runs. And now, as Jane finds herself with him in a Los Angeles hotel suite...
So, once again, my darling, I'm off. A fine honeymoon I'm giving you.
Where's the conference being held, Tom?
Belmati Hotel. Why?
I just wondered, you didn't say, and if I wanted to get hold of you for any reason.
Don't.
Don't?
Don't even want to get a hold of me. I'm going to be up to my ears in work.
Oh. Well, all right.
I'll see you later.
Belmonte Hotel. I wonder if you would tell me, please, in what room the National Conference of Psychiatrists is being held. What? Would you repeat that? There is no conference of psychiatrists being held at the Belmonte? Yes. Thank you. That's what I thought you said. Oh, Jane, girl, police or no police, you're getting out of this hotel and out of Tom Stoddard's life right now. Yes?
Jane, Iris. Detective Iris Patterson?
Yes?
Jane, I'd like you to get a taxi and meet me at the Santa Monica Pier.
Santa Monica Pier?
We think Stoddard may be getting suspicious. I've got to talk to you, and I'd like to do it where there's no chance of his discovering us. So if you could meet me...
Iris, I'm sorry, but I'm not meeting you at Santa Monica Pier or anywhere else.
That means you've changed your mind.
I was packing when you phoned. I'm getting out of here.
And going where?
Back to New York.
Don't do that, Jane.
Why not?
Because he'll follow you. Wherever you go, from here on, he's going to follow you because... Listen, Jane. There's a lot you don't understand, and I ought to explain. You can't run away from Stoddard. If you try, you'll be sealing your own death warrant. Jane, please, for your own safety, meet me at Santa Monica Pier. If you still want out after that, okay.
All right. I'll meet you. When?
Half an hour. I'll be watching for you.
Keep the change, driver.
Jane! Jane, over here! Here, Jane!
Hello, Iris.
Well, we're safe enough here, I think. Would you like something to drink, to eat?
Iris, I've been followed. Someone has been shadowing me since I left the hotel.
Of course.
That man in the car over there...
What do you mean, of course? You're under strict guard. The man in that car is a Los Angeles detective.
Oh, I'd forgotten I was being held under surveillance.
Well, you feel safer.
Much.
You're half an hour late, though. What happened?
Iris, I'm sorry, but... Well, if you won't believe this, I couldn't find the pantyhose that go with this dress. I hunted high and low, and I... What's the matter?
Nothing. Nothing.
Iris, there is something. The second I mentioned pantyhose, you got a funny look on your face.
Okay. I wanted to keep it from you. No sense alarming you unnecessarily. Jane, there's been another murder. Here in L.A. A bride strangled with a pair of pantyhose after being tortured.
No. Iris, that does it. I'm getting as far from Tom Stoddard as I can.
Jane, another girl who married Tom Stoddard became afraid of him, left him, and tried to hide from him, and... Well, it took him 2 years to find her and kill her. But he found her and he killed her.
No!
The simple truth is your safety lies in our arresting Stoddard with enough evidence to put him behind bars for life. Now tell me, Jane, has he mentioned that insurance policy yet?
Yes. Last night in Detroit. He wants to take out a $100,000 policy on my life with him as beneficiary.
You didn't sign anything, an application for the insurance?
No.
Well, then you have nothing to worry about. Until he asks you to sign, you're relatively safe.
Relatively?
Don't worry. Safe enough.
Iris, what did you want to talk about?
Well, the next step is getting started with the goods. By this time tomorrow, unless we miss our guests, you'll be in Miami, Florida.
What?
Where? Now, look, I'm going to lay this on the line, Jane, and I want you to understand clearly what you're in for. Where we want to catch Stoddard in the act.
The act of murder?
Of murdering you. To be precise, the act of attempting to murder you. He won't succeed, of course, because you'll be surrounded by police.
Of course.
I mean it. Now, the reason we feel sure he'll be heading for Miami, probably tomorrow, is because that's where the original murder took place.
The original murder?
Yes, here's the story. You see, nearly 5 years ago, Stoddard fell in love with a gorgeous, well, sex pot, madly in love. They met and they married in Detroit, came here to L.A. on their honeymoon, and then went on to a beach cottage a few miles north of Miami Beach.
Why did he murder her?
All right, I'm coming to that. Stoddard had to be away for 24 hours or so on business, and he left his bride in the cottage. But then he changed his plans, you see, unexpectedly, and came back to find her with another man. He killed the man first.
Oh.
Then he spent hours torturing his bride before he killed her.
I don't get this. If he killed this woman in Miami, and you know he did, how come he's still free? How come he's not in prison?
He was for more than 3 years. He got off with a reduced sentence on a plea of temporary insanity.
I see.
Only as we see it, and have every reason to believe, he's still insane.
You really mean it when you say if I try to go somewhere he can't find me, he'd still find me?
He'd still hound you until he does find you, yes.
Then I have no choice, have I?
I don't think so.
All right, Iris. I'll go along. What else can I do?
Honey, I'm back.
Coming. I was just fixing my hair.
Oh, now you can fix me up with a welcome home kiss.
Mm.
Well, what did you do with yourself while I was at the conference today?
Oh, this and that. I went for a walk, some shopping, sat by the pool.
Didn't swim?
Too chilly. Tom, how did things go at the conference?
Oh, fine. Just fine. Don't you believe me?
Of course.
Well, why the funny look?
Funny look? No funny look.
Oh, yes. You looked, well, I don't know, funny.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Well, to be plain about it, honey, I kind of get the feeling you don't trust me or something.
Tom, you're being perfectly ridiculous.
No, I don't think so, Jane. Either you're hiding something from me or you're very upset about something now. Which is it? Come on, what is it?
Nothing. Honestly, Tom, nothing.
Jane, there is something. Now, what is it? Let's have it.
Tom, really?
Jane, I'm no fool. I know when something's wrong, and something is wrong. Now, what is it?
I
you what?
I did want to get in touch with you today. I felt just so awfully lonely, Tom, and I phoned you at the Belmonte Hotel.
Well, what'd you phone me there for?
To get in touch with you. What else?
But I wasn't there. What would I have been doing there?
You said you were going to the National Conference of Psychiatrists, didn't you?
I did.
And you said it was being held at the Belmonte, didn't you?
No, I didn't. How could I when it was being held at the Beverly Towers?
You said the Belmonte.
I said the Beverly Towers. Did you try there?
Of course not.
No, of course not. Well, why should you if you misunderstood what I said this morning? You know what? I think you're fed up with this whole so-called honeymoon, which so far hasn't been any kind of a honeymoon at all.
No,
Yes, I think so. Well, now I've got another surprise for you, and this time a pleasant one. You want to hear it?
Of course.
Well, for the next week, for the next 3 or 4 days anyhow, I'm declaring a holiday. A patient of mine owns one of the prettiest beach houses you've ever seen, and he's offered it to me anytime I want it. Well, he isn't there, of course. And he isn't. And that's where I'm taking you tomorrow, for the duration of our honeymoon.
Where is it?
It's just north of Miami Beach. And this time tomorrow, you're going to be there.
Oh, we haven't been here even a full day. And I've never seen Los Angeles before.
We'll come back another time.
But we're here now. Oh, Tom, there's so many things I want to do. Visit the movie studios, Disneyland. We could run down to Capistrano.
Jane, please. I don't want to argue about this. I mean, frankly, I don't understand your attitude. Here, finally, I can take you to a really beautiful honeymoon spot, and you don't want to go. I don't get it.
It's just that... It doesn't matter. We'll go.
Of course we will. Unless... You haven't some other reason for not wanting to go, have you?
Other reason?
Other than wanting to stay in Los Angeles.
Why, no. What other reason could I have?
That's what I asked you. There's nothing wrong, is there?
No, no, Tom, of course not.
You sure?
Tom, you're hurting my arm.
Well, I'm sorry, honey, I'm sorry. I wouldn't hurt you for the world. Kill you, maybe, but not hurt you.
Kill me?
Oscar Wilde, I think, said, each man kills the thing he loves. If that's so, considering how much I love you, sweetheart, you haven't long to live.
So Jane Stoddard moves along, step by step, on her journey into terror. And obviously the end of that journey will be the beach house just outside Miami Beach, Florida. Trapped, caught, and helpless, in a web of circumstances beyond her control, Jane has no choice but to continue the journey to certain death. I'll return shortly with Act 3.
This is WBBM Chicago News Radio 78.
Woobum. Woobum.
Why not? Why not indeed?
That's right. She's got a problem. She's got a handful here, this gal, in this story.
Yes, she does. And he's going to get a handful before this is over, isn't it?
Yep. Yeah. Well, you know, the Honolulu Strangler sure gave the cops in that area a lot to handle. Following the discovery of Hughes's corpse, the Honolulu Police Department, then headed by Major Chester Hughes, no relation to Denise Hughes, decided to form a serial killer task force. They were immediately up against some pretty big odds because by 86, Oahu was the center of telecommunications boom. It had attracted thousands of migrant workers. It was also home to a huge military population. And most people in the military kind of know that. A lot of people get stationed there, both from the Army, Navy, and Marine Corps installations. Also between 85 and 86, 10.5 million people visited Hawaii as tourists. The killer could have came from any one of these populations. They did manage to create a profile. They figured he was an opportunist who attacked women who frequented vulnerable spots like bus stops and so forth. The killer did not stalk his victims before killing them, and given the location of the dumping sites, they figured he lived somewhere between Waipahu or Sand Island. Yep.
I like the sillier murder you were going to start off with there. So the sillier one, yeah.
Oh,
the sillier murder. Anyway, that takes us to number 4, CW. You can take the ball on this one. Is she back with us?
I don't know. I think so. Let me turn her off and back on again. Hold on. You with us?
CW?
Yoo-hoo. Perhaps she'll be back. She got dropped. So
perhaps.
I don't know.
Okay, I'll go ahead and take number 4 then.
Yeah, take number four, please.
Number four is The Murder of Luis Menderos. Luis Menderos was just 25 when she was murdered by the Honolulu Strangler on March 26, 1986. Menderos boarded a red-eye flight to Oahu. From there, Menderos told her family she planned to take a bus to Wapanau, in order to meet them following the tragic death of their mother. Menderos was last seen leaving the plane after it landed in Honolulu. Menderos' body was found by the construction workers on April 2nd near the Waikil Stream. Like the other four victims, Menderos was found partially clothed. The killer always removed the pants and undergarments and left his victims nude from the waist down. She also had her hands tied behind her back. Menderos had been sexually assaulted, we didn't say the R word, and strangled. In order to catch the killer, the HPD began sending their female officers undercover to Honolulu International Airport and to Kihei Lagoon. By now, it was clear that the killer favored out-of-town victims or those with limited connections to Hawaii. I think I just heard the ding. Did that mean that she's dropped again? Okay. Is she back?
It's dang it.
No. There she is. Okay.
There you is.
So you can take number three, CW, being back just in time to take number three.
Okay, that is The Murder of Linda Peace. Regina Sakamoto was Honolulu Strangler's youngest victim. The killer's last known victim was Miss Linda Peace, P-E-S-C-E. She was his oldest. Miss Peace died at the age of 36. The last person to see her alive was her roommate, who told police that she had left home the morning of April 29th, 1986. The next morning, this roommate was told that Miss Peace had failed to show up for work and that her vehicle had been found parked near a viaduct on Route 92 Interstate H1. It was at this point that she was reported missing. The case took a strange twist when an unidentified white male, age 43, told police that a psychic, also unnamed, had informed him that Miss Peace's body was located on Sand Island on May 3rd. The man took investigators to one spot on the island. Her body was not there, but it was later uncovered elsewhere on Sand Island. Miss Peace had been strangled, and police found her, again, with the hands tied behind her back, the modus operandi of this foul villain.
Yep. And a couple more segments of that after we wrap up our show tonight from CBS Radio Mystery Theater, and we might even have time for bonus material as we wrap up. From CBS Radio Mystery Theater, Journey into Terror. And the code.
How strange, how inexplicable are the workings of fate. How curious, too, that the fearful things that happen to others, we never consider may happen to us. Could we, any of us, ever find ourselves married to a murderer as Jane finds herself married to Tom Stoddard?
Seems
hardly likely. Might we one day realize we are headed for sudden death and powerless to prevent the inevitable? Scarcely possible. Well, Jane once thought so too, if she thought about it at all. But now, with a murderous husband at her side, she flies toward Miami Beach, Florida, and death.
Jane? Sweetheart, what is it?
What, Tom? I don't...
You seem so tense.
No, nervous, maybe. Flying always scares me a little.
Well, soon landing in Miami, so relax.
I'll try.
Oh, Kearns, my insurance man, sent me that application in L.A. I got it right here.
Application?
You know, the insurance policy I'm taking out on your life. Now, here's a pen. You can sign it now. And I'll shoot it back to Kearns from Miami Beach. Well, sign it, honey.
Yes, of course.
Good. That takes care of that. Oh, mind if I settle back and catch 40 winks?
Of course not. I'm going up to the ladies' room.
Okay.
See you talking to me.
He's taking a nap. I saw you come on board. Iris, I just signed for that insurance policy. $100,000 and naming him as beneficiary.
Did you have to?
No choice.
That's too bad. I hoped he'd hold off on that till I got things squared away with the Miami police.
I signed my own death warrant, you see.
No, no, no. It's not as bad as that. Now, the second we land, you'll be under close surveillance, and so will he. Follow instructions and you won't have a thing to worry about.
Well, I wish I could be as sure of that as you seem to
be. You can be. Just trust me. Now go back to your seat before he wakes up. The last thing we want is for him to see us together. Jane?
I can hardly bear to sit next to him.
Hang on to your nerve, Jane. We're close to the end now.
I just hope it's not the end for me.
What did I tell you? Beautiful, isn't it?
Yes, only it does seem rather isolated, doesn't it?
It is. That's one of the things that make it perfect for a honeymoon. That and the beach and the water out there. What more could a bride want? Except, of course, her husband.
Tom, please.
Jane, what?
I'm just not in the mood at the moment, that's all.
Well, I was feeling guilty about going off in the boat to fish for a few hours, but since you obviously don't love me anymore...
Of course I love you.
Of course you do. And I can't blame you for being a bit out of sorts, all this traveling. I've hardly given you a chance to settle down. Well, okay. I'm off to do some fishing. You can be alone for a few hours, give you a chance to relax. Let's have a kiss for good luck. Okay, be back for dinner. Fish dinner, I hope.
Jane? Jane!
Oh, Iris, thank heaven you're here. Tom's gone fishing.
Yes, we know. We watched him leave in the boat half an hour ago.
We?
Myself and two detectives assigned to the case. Now, look, Jane, I've got something to tell you you're not going to like. Just try to keep calm, will you?
Yes.
All right, here it is. We're quite sure, Detectives Allen and Barney and I, that Stoddard will attempt to kill you tonight.
Why tonight?
It's the anniversary of the night he murdered his first wife and her lover in this cottage.
No.
Don't look so frightened, Jane. In a way, you ought to feel relieved. After tonight, it'll all be over.
For me, maybe.
Not a chance. I said we're sure he'll attempt to murder you. But we're also sure he'll fail.
How can you be so sure?
Oh, well, we just are.
You're evading me, Iris. What makes you sure?
I didn't want to make things harder for you, Jane, but, well, there's the torture.
Torture?
Yes.
Are you telling me you're going to let him torture me before you move in?
I'm not telling you anything of the sort. What I'm saying is that we've got to let him make the first move. We've got to have the evidence to convict him. And that brings me to the next step.
Yes?
Now, we're going to have to bug this cottage. Set up a tape recorder with concealed microphones in each room.
Why?
Because once he has you, that is, once he thinks he has you where he wants
you... No, I can't go through with this.
Jane, you can. Now, please. Please trust me. As I say, once he... thinks he's got you where he wants you. He'll do a lot of talking. He'll get pleasure out of telling you who he really is and how he tricked you into marrying him and what he intends to do before he murders you. Now, Detectives Allen and Barney and myself will be here in the house recording every word. And Jane, dear, I give you my solemn word. Once we have the evidence, we'll move in on him so fast, he won't have a chance to lay a finger on you.
I hope you're right.
Now, One more thing before I go. Here's a sleeping powder. You always have cocktails before dinner. I slipped this powder into his cocktail tonight.
Put him to sleep? What on earth for?
So we can bug the place. He'll only sleep for an hour or so. It's a light dose.
But he's out fishing. Can't you do what you have to do now?
No, it's too risky. Everything has to be concealed carefully. And we can't chance him coming back unexpectedly.
Home is a sailor, home from the sea, without a single fish to show for it.
Oh, Tom, no luck?
Oh, lots of it. All bad. But you should have seen the one that got away. Well, at least I can drown my sorrow in a couple of dry martinis. You?
Yes, I'll mix them.
No, I'll do it.
You relax now. I've been doing it all afternoon. I may not be much of a cook, as I'm afraid you're going to discover at dinner, but I do know how to mix a dry martini.
Well, dinner is only a dinner, but a good dry martini is a drink.
Whatever that means.
Well, it must mean something. I'll think about it. Well, what'll we do tonight after dinner? Get a drive to Miami Beach?
Why don't we just stay here?
Well, that's okay with you.
Perfectly. It's going to be a full moon. We can sit on the beach and watch it come up over the horizon.
A perfect moon for a perfect honeymoon.
Here.
Ah, thank you. Looks good. Tastes good, too. You make a fine dry martini.
Thank you, sir.
Let's have these out on the porch so we can watch the sunset, huh?
Good idea.
Oh, this deck chair feels good. I'm more worn out from fishing than I thought.
Well, you've had a lot of air and sun.
That sun was hot and bright. Even with sunglasses, the glare was hard in my eyes. You didn't put anything in this martini, did you?
No.
I feel sleepy. So suddenly.
As you said, the glare of the sun on the water.
Worse than I thought. Oh, boy. I just can't keep my eyes open. Can't stay awake. Oh, I'm sorry.
Don't mind me. Close your eyes. Rest them.
Yes. I never felt so asleep. What was that?
Nothing. The glass slipped from your fingers. Don't worry about it. I'll clean it up. You sleep. Tom? Tom? Good. Iris, here. He's asleep.
Fine, Jane. That's just fine. You handled everything exactly as I wanted you to.
All right, now what?
Let's go in, so I can decide where to place the mice and the tape recorder.
You didn't bring them with you.
What?
The microphones and all that.
No.
Those detectives will bring it.
No.
Well, if you haven't got it and they're not bringing it... Glass doors, why are you locking them?
They have to be.
Whatever for?
Because. That's the way it was. These glass doors were locked when I came back that night.
What?
Came back unexpectedly and found Jim with her.
Iris, what are you saying?
I told you. That day on Santa Monica Pier, I was supposed to be away for a day or so, but then changed my mind and came back that night and found them together. In bed together. I killed him. But I tortured her.
Iris!
Put her through the hell I would go through later, thanks to her.
You?
Yes. And now you. You'll go through the tortures of the damned. Like the bride in Detroit, in Los Angeles, and finally here.
You tricked me from the first.
I tricked you. Why, you little naive fool. It was no trick at all. My only problem was that husband of yours asleep out there, trying, always trying to be one jump ahead of me, and sooner or later he'd have succeeded.
Tom! Tom was after you?
Has been. I escaped from the asylum.
No!
You don't know who your husband is? Well, of course you wouldn't. You hardly know him at all. He's not just a psychiatrist, my dear. He's a psychiatrist with the New York Police Department. Oh, poor fellow.
I escaped on the very day he married you. The police needed him. They needed him badly to figure out where I'd go, what I'd do. And he did figure it out. Only he was always just one step behind me, not one step ahead.
But, oh, this makes no sense. The day I met you on the Santa Monica Pier, I was followed. I was. The man in the car following me, you said he was a detective working with you.
With your husband, silly.
No.
Not me. Yes, you were being guarded, tailed every way you went. But not by me, by your husband.
Oh, why didn't they catch you? You and I sat there on the pier. That man in the car
couldn't do a thing without endangering your life because I had this. And could have plunged it into you the minute he made a move.
A knife.
Long enough to reach your heart. Sharp enough to do to you what I did to her.
No.
Before I strangled her. Slowly strangled
her. No. Oh, please.
Stand still. Oh, don't back away. Yeah, that's all right. Move back. Just keep moving back into that corner where I can get at you with this knife. Where I can start working on you. Little cut here, a nick there, a stab in just the right place. Making it last, the torture. Making it last as long as...
Don't move! Iris, don't move! Just don't move. Now drop the knife.
Tom! Oh, Tom, I put a sleeping powder in your drink.
A drink I threw away when I said I'd join you on the porch. Yes, Iris, I have been one step behind you. But this time, thank God, I've been one step ahead of you.
I seem to remember saying that our lives are fraught with the unexpected. Also seems to me that, wrong as I can be at times, this time I was right. Glad I was. Jane Stoddard was only a pawn in the game the fates play. But thank heaven, she remains a living pawn. I'll return in a moment. Iris is once again safe behind institutional walls, you'll be happy to know. As for Jane and Tom Stoddard, they're on a second honeymoon. Or maybe I ought to say the first. The other one doesn't count. Our cast included Lynn Loring, Roy Finnis, and Carol Tytel. The entire production was under the direction of Hyman Brown.
Now, a preview of our next tale.
Hyman!
I'm not with the police, I swear it.
And why all the questions, huh? Why all the nosing around?
Take it easy. I don't want no trouble in here.
She's something. She's got to be. Bess told her I do business in your place, and now she shows up here the next morning. Don't that sound fishy to you?
Well, it's funny.
Come on, baby.
Jimmy, don't. I was just the statue. Oh, I just wanted the statue.
The what?
I guess she means this thing.
What's the statue got to do with... Wait a minute. You're right, Wormer. She's not a cop. Yeah, she's been acting like a cop, but that's not what she is.
Please. Oh, please let me go. I didn't mean any harm. Please let me go.
Oh, no. Sugar, you're not a cop at all. What you are is a nun.
Radio Mystery Theater was sponsored in part by Anheuser-Busch Incorporated, Brewers of Budweiser, and Buick Motor Division. This is E.G. Marshall inviting you to return to our Mystery Theater for another adventure in the macabre.
Macabre.
Until next time, pleasant dreams.
I thought we heard that turtle.
No. I insist on macabre.
Yes, yes.
On WBBM Chicago.
Woobum. WBBM. Woobum.
It was a pretty frightening tale there.
It was.
That was a
with a surprise ending, which leads us to our little moral that we can learn from the story.
Oh, I was going to ask if we were going to have one. We are, even though we're sadly kind of garrulous tonight.
Yes, yes.
But time marches on. Eerie House Radio proudly presents a garrulous moral of the story.
With apologies to Gar, just because everyone tells you that your spouse is a strangler and a serial killer does not, but they may not be that. They might just be a serial bingo player.
That was a Godzilla-approved joke.
Okay.
The big fellow liked it, Dave. The big fellow liked it.
Good, good. Well, that leaves us back with just two more tidbits from our 10 terrifying facts of the Honolulu Strangler. So that's up to you, Dale. You got number two?
Sure. It's they finally get a first suspect following Pesci's murder. The 27-man task force from the Honolulu PD began setting up roadblocks all over the city. The goal was to stop and question citizens about the murders. One of the people questioned at a roadblock said they saw a white or mixed-race man driving Pesci's car. Honolulu officers made their first arrest on May 9th. They slapped handcuffs on the unnamed informant who had led them to Pesci's corpse. The suspect's girlfriend then told police that the man was just a smooth talker who had an interest in, bondage and stuff, weird stuff. The ex-wife said that the suspect often had intimate relations with her after tying her hands behind her back. These people are freaking weird. Other facts make this man a viable suspect. For instance, the suspect's ex-wife said that each murder coincided with a domestic dispute between the couple. During these fights, the suspect often left the house and did not come home until the next morning or during the wee hours of morning. The suspect also worked as a mechanic near Lagoon Drive and lived on Iwa Beach. Amazingly, the man was let go even after he failed a polygraph. But there's more. Dave?
But there's more, which would leave us to what? The CW.
Giving her a break. We're giving her a break. I'm throwing it to
you. Are we?
Dave. Yes.
Throwing it to me. All right. The new
Take
suspect.
It away, Dave.
2 months. After the May 9th arrest, an unidentified woman came forward and told police that she had seen Pesci with her killer on the night of April the 29th. When this man was brought in and stood before a police lineup, the eyewitness successfully picked him out. However, she ultimately refused to cooperate because she told police that the man had seen her on April 29th as well. On May 2018, the TV show Breaking Homicide revisited the Honolulu Strangler case and named the new suspect Howard Gay. Well, the term new is for a stretch. Gay is the man who led police to Thies's body back in 1986. In the episode, the former prosecutor, Peter Carlisle, all but admitted that Gay was the killer. According to Carlisle, the police lacked enough evidence against Gay in that the HPD had access to DNA testing in 1986, then Gay would have easily been convicted. Show's investigators also suggest that the Honolulu Strangler may have also killed a 19-year-old Lisa Au in 1982. Au was last seen alive after midnight, January 21st, 1982. Her car was later found near Kapa Quarry Road 10 days later on January 31st, 1982. A jogger found Owl's nude decomposing body on Tanslu's lookout in Waikiki. The police were never able to officially list Owl's cause of death.
Yeah. So they never found this guy. They think maybe this guy, this Howard Gay guy, I don't know.
unsolved case. Let's leave it at that.
That first suspect sounded awful good to me.
And I want to officially apologize to CW. I mean, we decided to do this, and then we jumped you when you called in. Here, it's your turn. Read.
Yeah, I've been kind of bamboozled, you know. Dale, do you feel those icy cold fingers floating through cyberspace again? It
wasn't my idea. It was Dave's idea.
I just thought it was neat to turn another strangling story through there that we could easily split up and do. That's all. So the whole family was involved that way.
That's true.
So
we're just a close-knit, tightly grasping, happy family. Sorry. Might want to go outside and take a couple of gulps of air there. Of course, you know, that car is just passing by your guys' house. That may be me.
it wasn't driving by. It was flying by. The winds are pretty high around here right now.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Maybe that's why the interwebs are a little bit wonky with all the high velocity winds.
Stuff keeps flying by our window. There was this awful looking lady riding a bicycle. She was horrible.
I'll get you and your little dog too.
Elmira Gulch.
Then there was the morning with the cow flying, you know?
Yes.
Yes.
But in all seriousness, an excellent idea to add that little bit of a sort of a micro crime podcast to Eerie House, Crime Aficionados. I hope you enjoyed that. I actually did. I had no clue that the delightful paradise of Hawaii.
Had their own serial killer.
No kidding. But I can guess why we've never heard of it. For all you Koshak Night Strangler and Night Stalker fans out there, remember, the authorities never wanted to make the tourists nervous and have them going elsewhere. All those tourist dollars, remember?
Yep.
Oh, yeah.
And that was the same problem in Jaws.
Oh, yeah.
The crooked mayor wanted to keep the beach open.
I think it's in so many resort towns. When it is time for all the outsiders to come in, that's when so many of those businesses that are there make such a big percentage of their money for the entire year. I can understand to a point why they wouldn't want to panic and then drive people away.
Yes.
Yeah. Before, back in the 80s, all they had were those pagers, beepers and everything. And you would think one good newspaper reporter, a Carl Koshak-like person, would have just scooped it and sent it off to all the networks they had back in the day. But they pretty much kept mum, I suppose.
Mum's the void,
yes.
Yeah. Can't do that anymore. Second something happens, you've got 95 people going on the Twitterverse, and then 100,000 people go on the Instagrams, and then you got the WhatsApps, and you got the Reddits, and et cetera, et cetera, and so on.
I like Honeygrams.
Ooh, what? Honeygrams. Ooh.
Oh, yeah, graham crackers. Okay. Good stuff.
Graham crackers. S'mores, people.
Much more palatable than those Instagrams.
Instagrams. So that's why everyone's a podcaster when there's a crime. Don't say, oh, my goodness. You say, oh, my gosh, do I have enough battery power to get this on
recording?
Right.
Yep. Yeah, you know,
right? True. It's like an accident. People gather around. Nobody offers to help, but everybody gathers around to gawk.
Yeah.
Well, now they don't just gawk. They get out their cell phones and start filming.
Yeah. Yep.
Absolutely. Yeah. This will make great gold. Yeah. This will put it on Meta. Get it on Twitter. Get it on WhatsApp. Snapchat. TikTok.
Goals. Yeah, well, what do I know?
It seems like the famous Hawaii 5-0 came up with a big zero in this particular case.
Yeah, Dano didn't get to book nobody.
Dano didn't get to book him. He did not, yeah.
No. Mm-hmm.
Although they may have had him. And like I said, they thought that had they had DNA testing back then, they certainly could have done it because they were the M word instead of the R word. So.
Yeah. Exactly. But if anyone's ever watched those cold case shows or listened to the cold case podcast, if they have any sort of evidence left with DNA, that's how they caught the Golden State Killer. Lady who ran that podcast, she passed away very suddenly, but she wrote a book, or the book was completed posthumously for her. They had some DNA evidence, and people do that 23andMe and DNA stuff just to find out their origins. That's how they got him, because I think a cousin submitted their DNA and it gave a match and they tracked it down, and now he is rightfully resting comfortably for the rest of his life in a Supermax.
Cool. Right along.
Cool. Definitely. Throw the book at him.
Well, we still have time for something, Dale, here, don't we?
Ooh.
I guess we do. Why not, let's see. Let's first go up to the wheel here, shall we? Or would you rather have music? It's up to you. I don't care. I'm ready for anything.
Let's spin the wind. Spin that wheel.
All right.
Spin.
I think I'll take it this time. Let me just reach up to the top of the wheel, give it a tug, and...
Around she goes, and where she stops, nobody knows.
With the assistance of Bob Moonen, musician second class, I'd like to play a little something we've cooked up special for the boys in the service. What do you say, Bob? Okay?
Today.
We're doing great.
We're doing fine.
Hello.
Welcome
good.
To the Hour.
Good. I'm actually just now tuning into the show, and I wanted to know what you guys are all about.
We are about old-time radio. We tonight, for example, we played an episode from CBS Radio Mystery Theater. Every Friday, we play old-time radio. On Saturdays, we often play old-time radio, but sometimes we have great guests. Perhaps we're having one now.
Wow. Well, I could be a great guest. I mean, we may never know. But I used to listen to a little bit of old-time radio when I was younger. But I don't anymore because, you know, I've been very busy with my life and everything. So I don't have a whole lot of time to listen to the old-time radio shows.
Well, anytime you like, you can stop by here.
Yeah, most definitely. And please remember, there's a wonderful archive of shows when you have a little time to kick back and relax and just enjoy.
Wonderful. I might have to do that. Yeah, one of my finest memories was listening to the Fibber McGee and Molly show when they over on YouTube. Whenever I want to listen to the old-time radio shows, and I will be completely honest with you, one scene hit me particularly hard. It was probably one of the most inspiring moments in old-time radio, and I have a quote from that particular episode. If you guys would like for me to
absolutely
inside it,
yeah, please share.
Wonderful,
please share.
Wonderful.
Please.
Well, the quote goes like this: "Never gonna give you up, never gonna let you down.
Oh, we get
never gonna run around and desert you. Never gonna say goodbye. Never gonna tell a lie."
We just got Rickrolled.
Yes, you did. Yes, you did.
Good one.
Yes, you did.
That is awesome. That is awesome.
Well, I'm glad you can enjoy it. Looking around for other blog talk radio shows to Rickroll, and I found you guys. So I may as well do that and have a little bit of fun. Give a little bit of wholesomeness to the print calls.
Thank you. And we appreciate that we were worthy of being Rickrolled by you. That's awesome.
Well, I'm glad that you were honored by the Rickroll attempt.
Well done. Well done. Well, thanks again, and stop by anytime.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. Goodbye.
Bye-bye. That was great. You never know who's going to call in here.
Wow. Surprise, surprise.
Yeah. You just never know what's going to happen around here.
Here.
Well-spoken person.
Absolutely.
Very well-spoken. Yep.
Very eloquent.
Yes. An eloquent Rick Roller. Oh, we're going to be back next week, aren't we, Dave?
We are. Do you have the schedule there? Do you need me to bump it up?
It's something. It's a topic that my father used to yell at me. Quit staring at the sun.
That's right. That's right. Especially during
out.
An eclipse.
Yeah. No, it's all about looking at the sun. I get no sun stories. We got lights out, alien worlds, and alien worlds. Parts one
That's
and
right.
two.
Part one
and
part two.
And then Saturday, which will be April 1st, no fooling, it's Seeing Ear Theater and Dimension X. So that's
Ooh,
next
right.
weekend.
Dimension X, yes.
That Senior Theater has Mark Hamill as a guest in an interesting
wow.
little story.
I don't know. Dave could be pranking us. I don't know. It's going to be April 1st. I don't know. What do you think?
No. We did our practical jokes last year.
Yeah. Thank you, everyone, for joining us tonight. Fogsbane, good old Bob, who is out of here. Hey, don't forget, Gara Ghoul doing anything?
The castle lights are growing dim.
As far as I know.
There's no one
Good.
Left
Check out the
me.
Twitch. Twitch channel. Check out Twitch.
When next we meet in Frankenstone.
Hey, Vincent, I'm
here.
Come alone.
Vince, we talked about this.
Can you dig it?
Yep, go ahead and dig it. I got my shovel. I can dig it.
We'll be shoveling on. Yipes.
Pretty close.
Oh, there you go.
So who was it that called in, Dale? I missed that part.
I have no idea. I have no idea who that was. That was a total surprise to me. Yep.
Mm.
Okay.
Okay, so if you get more of those prank calls like you used to, do you start making a little coin?
A little coin?
We kind of roll with them is what we usually do.
Yeah. Rick roll.
Cool.
No, we've been surprised before, sometimes in not so pleasant ways, but that was very pleasant.
Yeah, that was very, very nice. But it just was a show. You never know who's listening. You never know who's out there.
Mm-mm. I didn't even recognize the area code. I'm usually pretty good at that.
I think my area code is 0000 or 111111.
Yeah, you're a bunch of ones over here. You're showing up as all ones.
You are number one here, CW. And one and one. So I guess that makes you number 7, 8, 9, 10. It makes you 10.
11.
You're so many ones, you're 10.
Yep.
Is that 11?
Thank you.
3, 4, 5, 6, 11. 7, 8, 9, 10. No. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. Yeah.
10 elevens. No, 10 ones.
10 ones.
Yeah. 10 ones don't equal 11. Come on, Dale. I don't do math, and I can get that one.
Sorry, I was using my toes.
I can't help if you have 11 toes.
Wait a minute.
I got 12 toes, and I still got it right.
Hold on. Somebody's at the door.
Cable guy!
Oh, God.
Oh, don't let the cable guy in. We told you to cancel the cable, Dale. Erie House can't afford the cable. We told you to cancel that cable.
I know. Cut the cord.
Yep. Somebody kill the babysitter. That was such a good movie. Especially... when he took them to medieval times, when they were jousting, they were playing the Star Trek like action fight music. So funny.
Wild.
But then he went crazy.
If you ever want to see a fun babysitter movie, Adventures in Babysitting.
Oh, that is fun. Yeah.
I don't know if I've seen that.
And the best friend girl in there that also was babysitting with her, she became the gal that was Margot Lane in the Shadow movie with Alec Baldwin before he shot anybody for real. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, and I love it that the little girl that is part of her retinue of being babysat has an absolute wild obsession. She is Thor. She has a Thor helmet. She has a Thor hammer. She loves Thor.
She does, yeah.
This is way before Marvel got Thor going.
It's a fun little comedy romp there, Dale. Yeah.
It is.
I like those kind from time to time. That's why I fell in love with that, The Mighty Man Godfrey. I thought that is such a charming film.
Yeah.
Such a charming little film. I need to watch more of those of that vein. A lighthearted romantic comedy.
Yes. Oh, yes, indeed.
Oh, don't start the music up again.
Here, I hear it coming down the line. Oh, dear. Okay, hang on. Oh, dear.
No. Okay.
Crying in my tofu. Oh, dear.
Oh, no. Oh, no.
Johnny Williams, he sure knew how to move people.
Yeah, it's so funny. He was Johnny Williams till he did Star Wars, then he was John Williams, you know?
Yes. Went up a few notches. Once you get a better special effects team behind you.
Yeah, yeah. That in the Boston Symphony he did, was it conducting?
Boston Pops, I think, maybe?
Boston Pops, there you go, yeah, yeah.
Oh, yeah, that's right, he was conducting.
Yeah. He got to do a lot. Busy man.
Very busy.
And really many, many iconic soundtracks that you just know them when you hear them.
Yeah.
Whether it's Star Wars or Raiders or... Oh, God, there's countless.
The Superman, too, didn't he? The Superman movies with Christopher Reeve?
I think he did.
Yeah.
He did.
Yeah.
When he was merely Johnny versus John.
Yeah.
But that was good adventure music in the Lost in Space series. A lot of the early music.
Yep.
I wonder if he did the other Irwin Allen stuff, like Land of the Giants, or I don't think so.
I'm not sure. They have that sound to them, and usually when you hire in with somebody like that, you're there for his run. Yeah. So yeah, I can see him doing Time Tunnel and Land of the Giants and as well. You know.
He didn't do Voyage to the Bottom of the Sea. That was, I think, Paul Sawtelle. If I'm not mistaken.
That was a good soundtrack nonetheless, though.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I still go back to my boys, though, like Bernard Herrmann and Max Steiner and Franz Waxman. Good stuff.
Oh, yeah.
The oldie moldies.
Yeah. I didn't get
bumped tonight, but I do need to move along this evening, so
I will bow out. I can call our friend to the stage to take us away with your kind permission, gentlemen.
Surely.
Mr. Durante, you can tickle those ivories at your discretion.
What are you waking me up for? I'm not ready for this.
Good night. It's time to say good night. Toodles. What more to say but good night? We've had a few laughs, and it's time for toodaloo.
TTFM.
Horrible. We say, and Inka Dinka Doo. Good night. Good night, folks. And good night, Mrs. Calabash. Wherever.